Good morning and welcome to Neocon View. I'm Peter Newman, and a play is about ready to open in the Manzanita area, also perform in Pacific City and Tillamook. The play is Lost Pioneer. We'll talk about the play with the creators of said play, Mark Beach and Liz Cole. And I'll start by saying in the confession department that Liz Cole is my wife. So I don't think I've interviewed Liz since... before we were married, but she also goes by the name of Megan, and we'll explain all of that, how that all came to pass in due time. But welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter.
So, Mark, I know you are a historian. In fact, you were on the very first Neocon View program more than a couple of years ago. So, as a historian, so we'll start with you and the genesis of this project.
This project began, Peter, when I realized that my wife and I owned what was the homestead of one of the characters that inspired this play. A woman who, with her husband, homesteaded on Highway 53 at the far south end of Clatsop County. She was married at age 16 and moved there in 1891 and lived there for almost another 50 years of her life. So I started thinking about what an interesting life she had as one of the original people living in the lower Nehalem Valley, actually on the North Fork of the Nehalem River. And as I learned more about her and her experiences, I then started thinking, gosh, maybe there could be a story or a lecture or a presentation. And pretty soon I started thinking, well, we have a magnificent actress in our community, and why don't we think about a play? So I began talking with Liz about writing a play.
And Liz, when the project was first presented to you, how did you respond, and what was your contribution?
Well, he came to me, and I thought it was a terrific idea. And we, Mark and I, then for the next couple of years, gathered about, Mark, once a month or so, to talk about who the character might turn out to be. Mark would provide reams and reams of historical material, partly about the lives of women, young women who homesteaded on the Oregon coast in the late 19th century, and also about the world events that would have happened between that time and the time that we decided to set the play, which is Christmas Eve of 1941, a few days after Pearl Harbor.
So, Mark, therefore, this play isn't just about this one imagined woman that occupied your land, but it's a congregation of people.
It's a congregation of women, Peter. As I started thinking more about this project, I looked for documentation that might reveal the lives of other women. There was a woman by the name of Mary Garizzi who had left quite a bit of oral history interview tapes, and also was written about in Comtext, which is the journal for the Clatsop County Historical Society. And she and her husband homesteaded several different homesteads in the North Tillamook County and then again in the Cannon Beach area. As I got farther, I discovered that a family who had homesteaded on Highway 6, about 25 miles east of Tillamook, the Rear family, Jenny Rear, was interviewed extensively by one of her granddaughters, and then those interviews were transcribed. So we ended up with three women, one of whom, Olive Scovel, was the person who lived on the property I mentioned earlier, whose descendants live all over the North County area right now, and who lives in the memory of her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and then the extensive written records of two other women to kind of compile into the character of the play.
Our guests this morning on A Neocon View, Mark Beach and Liz Cole, creators of a play, Lost Pioneer, which opens this weekend in Manzanita with also performances in Pacific City and Tillamook. Liz, the character that proceeds from the late 19th century to 1941, how do you get in the space of somebody who has lived that life, a long life, and one quite distant from us?
I try to do what I do for all my characters, which is to begin at the beginning with as many facts about what her life would have been as possible. And of course, that's exactly where Mark has been so wonderful in providing information. It's where character study always begins, with what the given circumstances are. And the first given circumstance for her name is Franny, by the way, Frances Franny, is that she was born in the Willamette Valley, and was being pursued by a couple of swains in the Willamette Valley. This one young man came up to her and said he would like to take her to a plot of land that he had bought on the North Oregon coast. And she coyly, you know, has said, "Why, what does that provide me that I couldn't get in the Willamette Valley?" And he answers, "Adventure." And that's what Mark and I feel it was the starting point for Franny, for Franny's life, as it turned out. It turned out to be a very different kind of adventure than she thought the young swain meant. But it did provide adventure. And then so that's where I start from, and then I have been trying to think of how it would be to have lived through the years in U.S. history where so much happened. With the World War, First World War, the Depression, beginning of the Second World War, and lots of other things, also in the service of given circumstances.
The adventure of the North Oregon coast in the late 19th century. Can you give us a description? What would she have seen as she came out to the coast?
She would have seen sand dunes. This is long before most of the vegetation here was deliberately planted or spread. I say spread in the case of Scotch broom. She would have seen huge stands of ancient forests, the timber, primarily the Douglas fir that was here. She's here just at the beginning of the logging era on the North Oregon coast. So her homestead has maybe a little plot of land, maybe half of it, let's say 10 acres, 20 acres or so, have been cleared. But surrounding her is a forest. She would have seen the original wetland swamps that have much been drained or diked off. So it would be a much, I want to say, natural landscape because of all the changes that we've put on the landscape in the last 120, 30 years. And a much less forgiving landscape than we have invented for ourselves. Whether she found that adventurous or depressing, you'll have to wait and see of the play.
And who would she have found out here? Who preceded her?
There would have been a tiny handful of homesteads already established, so that her nearest neighbor might be 3 miles down the rutted, muddy road, and that nearest neighbor might be a woman of 20 instead of a recently married woman of 16, as she was.
And the play starts and centers on 1941. What's obviously the start of World War II, but why 1941?
Well, it's a one-woman play, so we need to keep it very simple. We needed a circumstance in which the woman who's now later in life, she's now 66 years old, could remember people and events in her life from the standpoint of one particular event that everybody that the audience would connect with right away, which would be just a couple of weeks after Pearl Harbor. And it happens that in this play, now here's an example of making up something about the character. The character has a grandson who is in the U.S. Navy stationed in Pearl Harbor. So part of the play, a little bit of the play, revolves around concern for this grandson. This is long before cell phones or Facebook or any other immediate communication, and there were thousands and thousands of American families on Christmas Eve of 1941, uncertain but worried about the fate of their loved ones in Pearl Harbor.
Liz, what are the challenges of a one person, one woman show? There you are. You're on your own out there.
I happen to love the format of the one person show, but there are challenges. For one thing, you have no one to blame but yourself. That's probably the biggest one. On the other, but the flip side of that is that if it goes very well, you can take the credit for it, I have always liked talking directly to the audience, which I will be doing in this case. I love the intimacy of it. I've come to prefer it, that kind of intimacy, to being on a large stage with the imaginary fourth wall. There's certainly always a challenge of keeping audiences' interest, but I believe that the inherent interest of this woman's life is more than sufficient to keep that interest.
I said at the beginning we would explain how Liz Cole and Megan Cole are in fact the same person, and maybe you can do that and talk a little bit about your acting career.
I can, thank you. My legal name is Elizabeth, or Liz. And when I, years and years ago, when I joined the first actors' union, I came up against a rule which still applies, that there can only be one person of a given name in the union.
So somewhere out there, there's a Liz Cole.
There's Elizabeth Cole. And so it's the reason for that is that I'm in the same union as, let's say, Meryl Streep. So if I chose the name Meryl Streep, it would be confusing, even though I might get a few more accidental residuals. So I had to change my name, and it's not easy when you don't want to change your name. I went out and bought a Dell paperback, Name Your Baby. And I took months going through it, and
gave up at the M's.
I came up to the M's. Well, the other thing is, I'll be brief on this, is that from eighth grade on until well into my 20s, I had a fairly serious stutter. And one of the sounds I stuttered the most over was an unaccented initial vowel, like Elizabeth. So I needed a name that started with a consonant, and that turned out to be Megan. Little did I know that every third mother within the next year was going to start naming her infant daughter Megan.
And since that involuntary name change, you've gone on to do a lot of work on various stages around the country.
Various stages, yes. I've worked all over the country, and in the 90s, I went down to L.A. and did some television work. Was lucky enough to get in some pretty popular shows like Seinfeld and various Star Treks and ER and so on. Yeah, I've had a great career, and I've been able to make a career entirely in acting, which is it's about luck. It's primarily about being in the right place at the right time. I do find, I won't go into this, but I do find that work is far and few between now, because I am, how shall I say, getting older.
Our guests this morning on the Econi View, Mark Beach and Liz Cole, who have created a presentation, a play called Lost Pioneer. It has its premiere this Friday, September 28, and then a performance on Sunday at the Pine Grove in Manzanita. Also performance on Saturday, October 6th in Pacific City. That is a 7 p.m. performance. And then Tillamook at 4 p.m. on Sunday, October 7th. Mark, these venues, they're reasonably small venues, and I think that gives you an opportunity to, as Liz was talking about, have this communication with the audience. It seems to me what it really also does is gets the audience has a chance to really see a flesh and blood character of over 100 years ago in, depending on where we are in the course of the play, really up close and hopefully gets to know that person.
You know, Peter, one of the best compliments we've gotten about the development of this play was several weeks ago when Liz and I gave a little sample and explained some of the background of the play to the Nehalem Valley Historical Society. And there was a gentleman in there who used to be mayor of Wheeler, and he is now in his early 80s. And he said, "Oh my goodness, Liz, you reminded me of my own grandmother." And I just felt that we really nailed it. If we could pull out a memory like that of a fellow who's in his 80s, we pretty much captured the character that we're after. We want that kind of close experience with the audience, and we want the audience to try to drop into what their grandmothers and great-grandmothers, how they might have spoken, what experiences they might have had.
I'm curious, as a historian, we have on the one hand these days so many opportunities to note our lives, Facebook, Twitter, mm-hmm. etc., websites. On the other hand, are we losing a sort of oral tradition that more richly informs characters such as this?
That's a very interesting question, Peter. We're certainly losing or making it more difficult to capture the written or videoed or Facebook tradition because there's just such an immensity of information. Are we losing the oral tradition? I think we need to continue to pay attention to one generation transmitting to another. I have the sense with my own grandchildren that they don't seem to be as interested as I think they should be, of course, as a grandparent, or want them to be. On the other hand, I'm continually surprised at the interest that I know a number of 20-somethings and 30-somethings that are very into genealogy. And genealogy as a form of history captures exactly this intergenerational desire to find out, well, what was my uncle like or my great-grandmother like? So I think my answer to your question is we're not losing it. We're just finding different ways to capture it.
Though this character is of the West Coast, and you grew up in the Midwest, are you able to tap into maybe people who you grew up with and know and knew in informing who this character is as a person?
Well, even though I grew up in the Midwest, I never knew any of my grandparents, and so I came to a sense of generation very late in my life, as a sense that of continuity and of passing along information. So no, I'm not getting really any of, I would say almost any of my information from my actual Midwestern years, but absolutely from people that I know now in the North Coast area. And also, of course, from my own imagination, which is pretty vivid. And I want to make a comment about the question about oral tradition. That when Mark and I first started talking about doing this, we both agreed that storytelling was a better way to convey inherently interesting information than, let's say, a lecture where we're talking about. In the lecture, we might be talking about what the situations were, what the people were like. But when we tell the story, especially in the first person, which is what the theater does, that then it becomes part of the audience's in the moment experience, and very likely, and we certainly hope, more of a memorable take-home experience.
Mark, you've had a chance to work with historical societies around here too, which are a group really responsible for bringing this whole thing to life, plus a nice grant thrown in.
Well, we feel very fortunate that we got a small grant from the Tillamook County Cultural Coalition, which is part of the Oregon Cultural Trust, and they've been very helpful. We also are sponsored by three historical societies in Tillamook County that were actually partners in applying for the grant. So the Nehalem Valley Historical Society, which is based here in Manzanita, is the one that I'm most familiar with, but the Tillamook County Historical Society, which represents the entire county, and then the Tillamook Pioneer Museum has been, they've also worked with us in sponsoring the grant and in providing venues for the performances. You mentioned earlier the small venues. We deliberately look for venues that aren't going to be a theater in the sense of stadium seating, but that might accommodate 50 or 60 people in a much more intimate kind of setting.
One of the people we've not talked about is the person who gave voice to the character, Ellen West, the playwright. What was it like working with a playwright?
Harkening back to what Liz said several questions ago, Liz and I got together every month or so, every 6 weeks for a year and a half or so. And finally, we looked at each other and said, well, she said, I know about being on stage. And I said, I know about history. But neither one of us apparently can write a play. We need a playwright involved. So we developed a little abstract of what we hope to do, and we put it on, we looked at the on some websites, and we found several possible playwrights in Oregon. And we corresponded with them by email, and we finally came up with Ellen West, who is a playwright based in Portland, and very experienced and a popular playwright there. The leader of a group of playwrights and the producer of a number of plays on her own in Portland. And so began corresponding with Ellen about, well, here's where we're going and here's who we are, and would you like to be part of this project? And Ellen said yes, and pretty soon Ellen wrote a rough draft of a script, and now there were three of us who could kick this script around and say, well, could we try this and could we try that? And of course, Ellen, as the playwright, had her own ideas about where we might go with this. And that took a year or so, and then we had Liz called a table reading, which was about almost a year ago now, where Ellen and Liz and I and a few other people sat around, and Liz, in a sense, performed the play, and that was the final rough draft, and we've tuned it up a little bit, and we're ready to go with it now.
Now, you had a run-through, courtesy of the Nehalem Valley Historical Society, and at that, you started taking some questions from the audience, and you will during this performance as well. Did anything surprise you in the interaction with the audience?
Well, let me first start by saying that our Mark's and my idea is to begin the question and answer session after each performance with essentially scripted questions that I know are coming.
So you will be in character as you answer.
I will answer them in character as well as I can. We did a dry run of this at the meeting you're talking about, and there was a gentleman who had his scripted question, and I gave my scripted answer, and then there was a fellow in the audience who asked his own question, and I answered it in character, and it was just fine. I love improvising, which is a good thing, because there'll be a lot of improvisation in the in this Q&A section. And then after the Q&A in character, I think that Mark and I are intending to have questions and answers about the process of putting the play together, of developing the character, and so on. So there'll be two kinds of Q&As.
You've lived with this character now for quite some time. Do you continue to learn things about her?
Oh, sure. An actor always learns, keeps learning about the character he is playing. It's one of the great great joys of acting. An actor always learns much about the character just by being in front of the audience. An audience always teaches an actor. And that's a scary part, and it's also a very pleasurable part.
And I guess, Mark, we could throw the same question to you. Is this the person you imagined when you were thinking about who homesteaded on your property? Or is it a richer character?
Well, it's a much richer character because Liz has made it so rich, and Ellen West has made it so rich. So I could imagine a lot of the events and some of the people that the character encountered, or some of the people that she got to know quite well. But I couldn't really imagine, particularly the mature woman that had to go through the death of two husbands, that went through the death of several children and watched other children grow into adulthood. I couldn't imagine the way in which this woman interacted with her own community as that community changed. For example, the character lives through the entire introduction of the automobile age. It's strictly horses and wagons when she starts the homestead, and 30 years later, she's learning to drive. So Ellen West and Liz Kolb brought life to this character that I just imagined as an historical character. They made her a real character.
I guess that's what makes historical fiction so interesting, is that you end up finding out something that, if not strictly speaking, is factually true, is emotionally and humanly true.
Well, that's a good point. And this, I want to stress that a lot of this is fiction. It's imagination about how a person such as this might have experienced life on the North Oregon coast. One of the examples of that is there is a character in the play who is one of the few remaining Tillamook Indians. I'm not going to say how this character is involved, but to introduce such a character required a leap of imagination. There were, in fact, a few remaining Tillamook Indians that could have interacted with Franny, our main character, and so we developed such an interaction.
The play is Lost Pioneer. It opens this Friday at the Pine Grove Community House in Manzanita. Performance at 7 o'clock, and then Sunday also at the Pine Grove at 3. There is a performance in a couple of weeks, October 6th at Pacific City at the Nestucca Valley Presbyterian Church, and then in Tillamook at the Pioneer Museum, courtesy of the museum. And for more information, there are a whole bunch of phone numbers. Can we send people to one number for more information about all of this?
You can get tickets in Manzanita by calling 503-368-6643. That's the phone number of the president of the Historical Society. Or you can leave a question at 503-368-5059, the voicemail for the Nehalem Valley Historical Society.
And then in Pacific City, 503-965-6973. And in Tillamook, 503-842-4553. And again, the first performance is this Friday. Mark Beach and Liz Kolb, what a pleasure to talk with you both. And best wishes on what I think is going to be a very, very interesting project and the performances.
We're pretty excited about it, Peter, and I appreciate you giving us a chance to tell your audience about this.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's been a long time coming, and I can hardly wait for this weekend and beyond.
And we will see you next month for another edition of Neocon View. Until then, have a great day.